We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
There's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being. This much we know.
I think that it is a good time for those who voted for the ban against gay marriage to sit and reflect and anticipate their great shame and the shame in their grandchildren's eyes if they continue that way.
I feel that this happened for a much bigger reason than baseball. I think God's put me now in a forum where I can be heard, and I hope that kids would not make the same mistake that I made.
To all of the gay and lesbian kids out there tonight who have been told that they are less than by their churches, no matter what anyone tells you, God does love you. Very soon, I promise you, you will have equal rights federally across this great nation of ours.
One of the subjects that has seen some migration in the Christian mind, especially the American Christian mind, is the subject of abortion. Some might say, well, we've had 35 plus years of legalized abortion in the United States since 1973 in Roe v. Wade, and that's going to rub off on Christian denominations. It's interesting to note that the shift on abortion in Christian denominations in the United States, that is shifting from a uniformly pro-life position to, in some cases, more and more pro-choice positions, took place, in some cases, well before 1973. The church, or at least some of the denominations, seem to have been leading the way, or at the very least reflecting the common cultural view. We're going to talk about denominational positions on abortion, how they're shifting one way and the other. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 4th of March. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. In about 15 minutes, we'll begin a review of Joel Osteen's sermon titled Believing for a Supernatural Year. We'll see what Joel thinks about what makes up a supernatural year and whether or not Jesus plays a part in this believing for the supernatural year in our sermon review coming up in about 15 minutes. Dennis DeMauro is our guest to talk about denominational positions on abortion. He's secretary of the National Pro-Life Religious Council, author of the book A Love for Life, Christianity's Consistent Protection of the Unborn. He's also written an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Dubious Choice, Are Denominational Positions on Abortion Changing? Dennis, welcome back.
Well, thanks so much.
If you look at the broad picture of Christian denominations in America, are we looking at something that is predominantly pro-choice or pro-life?
Well, I actually, in the book, I did not go through the specific numbers in the United States. I did the world instead, and I found it to be about 72% pro-life. I think if you look at also the denominations that I couldn't get good data on, it's probably a little bit higher than that, 75%. Here in the United States, I would say it's somewhere a little bit less than that in the pro-life arena. I would still think it's a majority of pro-life in the United States, but not 72%.
Did you run your numbers in relationship to the number of Christians or simply the number of denominations?
No, I did it the number of Christians. So I broke out all the denominations in the world and took their positions and then did the math. So
just give me your best guess. If you took the Roman Catholic Church out of the figuring for American denominations, would you still have predominantly pro-life views there?
No, I don't think so. I think if you took the Roman Catholics out, you would have a pro-choice majority.
When did the shift begin and where did it begin from, as you point out in your article in Touchstone magazine, uniformly pro-life to places here and there going pro-choice?
Well, it really all started in the 1960s. We see that the rise of an organization called the Clergy Consultation Service, and that organization was created because a number of liberal clergy people in various Christian denominations, mostly the mainline Protestant denominations, decided that the laws weren't moving quick enough for them in legalizing abortion. And so what they did was they created this consultation service where women could call these clergy members and ask for them to refer them to abortionists, either legal or illegal, across the United States and even overseas. And so from that organization came a number of other organizations. What is today the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice kind of came out of that organization, and it's now a very powerful and well-funded organization that promotes abortion in Christianity in the United States.
What denominations were the first to begin the turn toward a pro-choice position or advocacy or at least toleration of pro-choice positions?
Well, it's really the ones that are kind of on the forefront of the pro-choice position today. They would be the United Church of Christ, early mover, would be the Presbyterian Church as well, and then the other mainline denominations came after that, and they all started to make that move around 1967.
I'm interested also in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, because you point out in your article that one of its predecessors or one of the elements in the merger that made up that largest Lutheran denomination in the United States was already moving toward a pro-choice position even before the formation of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Where does that larger church body stand now?
Well, ELCA, of course, is still a pro-choice denomination. From what I can tell in the study, it really hasn't changed its position a whole lot. It is pro-choice, and hopefully there are people within it who can make a difference in the future. But that really hasn't happened too much yet in the ELCA.
You write about the Southern Baptist Convention. This is now a part, if you discount Roman Catholics, the largest denomination in the United States, some 16 million. You say their story of walking back and forth across the line is the most radical story. Tell us that story.
Well, of course, when Roe versus Wade was first passed, the Southern Baptist Convention came out with a statement saying it was a, you know, kind of an advance in Christian freedom, if you can imagine that. So they were avidly pro the Roe versus Wade decision at that time in 1973. But later in that decade, in the 1970s, the Southern Baptist Convention was taken over by a more conservative group. And the battle there was over the issue of biblical inerrancy, which the left taking the position of a more critical method of biblical interpretation, and the right taking a more a strong position on biblical inerrancy, that is, that the Bible, not a literalism, but that the Bible in the end cannot err. And so this was the split, and of course the inerrancy side won and took over and then switched their position on abortion, taking a more biblical stance, I would say, and that has been leading the way. They really have been leading the way in Protestantism since that time, and for instance, Richard Land, very outspoken member of that denomination, always talking about the sanctity of human life and defending the unborn. So the Southern Baptists really, really moved around, moved in the right direction, and really have taken the lead in the Protestant Church.
Is there any, I mean, I wonder how unprecedented it is that in the late 60s, mid-late 60s, Protestant denominations in the U.S. would begin to advocate for abortion. Is there any precedent for that in the broader swath of Christian history?
No, I think really what has happened is that for some reason in this 20th century, and I really think probably it was the beginning of some contraception in a large particular use in the United States and around the world, really made the idea of abortion possible. And also the way that abortion was done was obviously risk the life of the mother in an extreme way in the history of the world. That is, abortion's always been around, but it was usually by some kind of an abortive drink that a woman would drink, essentially poisoning herself, hoping to have a miscarriage and have it not kill her. And I'm really coming to the conclusion that the reason we were able to come to this position as a church is because the life of the mother probably would not be lost in abortion if it were legalized. See, I think that what happens is that we have we'll sin as much as we can get away with in this world, unfortunately. And I think with the mother being somewhat safe, and not completely safe, obviously, because women die today by legal abortions, but somewhat safe, they were able to somehow then come to the idea that, well, maybe it would be all right to have legalized abortion. And unfortunately, the Protestant denominations just followed along with the culture. They, well, it's good with the culture, so we don't want to be uncool or unsympathetic. I'm not sure what the motivations were back in those days, but they just kind of went along with the flow of the culture. And unfortunately, we're seeing the dividends today, 1.2 million abortions every year.
Dennis DeMauro is secretary for the National Pro-Life Religious Council. He's author of the book, A Love for Life, Christianity's Consistent Protection of the Unborn. You'll find information on A Love for Life at our website, issuesetc.org, when you click the on-demand section. And he's also written an article for the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Dubious Choice, Our Denominational Positions on Abortion Changing. Dennis, it's always good speaking with you. Thanks for being our guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
When we come back from this break, it's time to do a sermon review. We do these from time to time on Issues Etc., sometimes a favorable review. That is, we choose a sermon that gets it right, that mentions Jesus, and often where Jesus is the center, the subject of the verbs, where Jesus actually, you're actually hearing from the preacher what Jesus does and what he's done for you. Those verbs are the verbs that Jesus himself actually did. Living for you, suffering for you, dying for you, rising again, all for your salvation. Then sometimes we like to review sermons that don't do any of that. We'll see what Joel Osteen, America's most popular preacher, has to say about Jesus, if anything, in our sermon review after this.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Prevention First Act.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid filed something called the Prevention First Act just days before President Obama took office. But what exactly is the bill supposed to prevent? Supposedly, by forcing health insurance plans to pay for birth control, it would prevent unplanned pregnancies and their ending in abortion. But as Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, told Life News, the Prevention First Act would direct hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to the abortion industry, a business that already receives over $286 million each year from federal taxpayers. It is hard to see how this will prevent abortions.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.